Got old uniforms? Reese by Nicole P. has the solution. Nicole, a veteran, handcrafts unique wreaths from military uniforms, a perfect tribute for your loved one's service. Commemorate special moments with personalized wreaths crafted by Nicole. No uniform, no problem. Wreaths by Nicole P. has every fatigue print ready for your custom creation. Explore wreath options at www.wreathsbynicolep.com or message Nicole directly on Facebook. Wreaths by Nicole P. Preserving memories one wreath at a time. Honor the past, celebrate the present.
The forces are very similar in that we've got a job to do. In terms of training, I always say to this story, but you might find this quite interesting. In Britain, we have our recruits and our officers. And the way the UK works is officers tend, if you're in the Navy or the Army or the RAF, to train in a different place to the recruits. But what I love about the Marines, and I say this to everybody, in the Royal Marines, the same training areas, officers and recruits, the same environments. So there's one thing you get with the British Marines, which I absolutely love, and it's so unique within the UK Armed Forces. Our officers, you know, whether you like them or not, but they've trained in exactly the same areas, doing the same hills, the same mud, the same horribly, horrible hill runs that you've done. So you have that respect there.
Welcome to Your Story Doesn't End Here, the mental health podcast of military and veterans who refuse to be silenced. I'm your host, Rachel, and my mission with this podcast is to be a voice for those who don't have a voice, bring awareness to mental health issues, provide value and solutions, and to change the culture when it comes to mental health within the DoD organizations.
Hey everyone, thank you so much for coming back for another episode of Your Story Doesn't End Here. Today's guest is Chris Hunt, who is a former British Royal Marines Commando and now mental performance psychologist who loves challenges and who is all about the mental game, obsessed with changing thoughts, feelings, and behavior for the better. And there is so much more to his bio, but as I told him, I'm going to let him explain a lot of that to you. And I wanted to keep it short and brief in the bio today. But first off, Chris, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Hey, it's a pleasure. I've been excited about this one, Rachel. So yeah, cheers for having me.
Yes, I love it. And before we get into you sharing your story, there is one question that I want to ask you. If you could describe how you are feeling today in one word or several words, how would you describe it?
Off the chart, baby.
I love it. That's incredible. I just started adding that one in. You're the third person I've asked that question to now. And I think it just gives us a really good feel for, you know, what energy you're bringing into the show today, because yeah, not cool. Everyone's coming in super excited. Some people are coming in a little more mellow, and that's okay, but it adds that element of human emotion. So thank you for participating in that short, simple little exercise. And I'm going to pass it off to you to share your story with the listeners.
Yeah, I love that. I love a little curveball. I wasn't expecting that one, but I don't know about you, but I quite like it when you have like a raw interview like we're doing today or a raw chat, because it's not scripted. Anyone can do, I don't know about you, but how many videos do you see online these days where you can actually see the editing in the real video where look, I'm not hating on people that do edited videos, but I like things raw. I like them unscripted. I like the fact that when you do certain podcasts and videos, you do make the odd little mistake here and there. It's natural. It's human. And actually, I think the more people that do these kind of raw chats, the better, because especially for youngsters, because they'll realize life isn't perfect. Nature isn't perfect. No one is perfect. So just roll with who you are and be authentic about it.
Yeah. You know, when I do the podcast where they're like, here's the questions ahead of time, It always throws me for a loop, because then my brain starts immediately going in this like perfection mode. And what's funny is whatever I pre-plan in my head ahead of time is never what the actual answer comes out being. So I just started like, okay, cool. Here's a list of questions. Thank you for sharing that. I'm going to ignore that. I'm just going to come into the interview and just answer it however it comes out and know that that's perfect. Yeah. So yeah, no, I'm the same way with the raw and the real one. So I appreciate you acknowledging that.
No, you know that. Well, look, like I said, cheers to having you, Rachel. This is cool. I love doing podcasts. I always like it when it's with military in different countries. You know, we're across the pond, right? Over in the UK. Like you introduced me as, my name's Chris. Former Royal Marines Commando in the UK. I served with the Marines from 2006 to 2013. I was in Afghanistan on my first Herrick tour. So we call the tours in Afghanistan Herricks. So that's the name given to them. I was on a Herrick 09, end of 09, beginning 10. And I was out in beginning of 11 to the end of 2011. First tour was in Kandahar. And then the second tour was in Helmand. Very, very different tours. The first tour was very much close protection and driving with a general, Brigadier General, looking after him, flying about, you name it. We flew everywhere around Afghanistan. It was a really cool tour. Did a bit of time on the ground as well with the Welsh Guards. And then my second tour, we were doing convoy protection, force protection, QRF around Helmand. So both very different tours. But what I will say is, look, you can take the boy out of the Marines. You can't take the Marines out of the boy. I may not be in the Marines anymore, but I love being a commando. It was a big part of my life. If I'm honest, I've had a pretty decent life. My parents gave me a good upbringing. I went to university, came out, thought I wanted to work in an office, always been quite sporty. Quickly realised now at this moment in my life, this isn't for me. And I was like, do you know what? At the time, there was a programme, Rachel, called Commando on the Frontline. And it was following a bunch of recruits in Marines training. And I was like, this is a sign. This is a sign. So I went in the Marines. I didn't opt for the officer route purely because at that time they were doing it annually. There was like an annual intake. And as you probably guessed already, I'm quite a enthusiastic, eager beaver. So I was like, man, this is hot. This is a sign. I'm ready. I'm good to go. I'm not going to wait a year. I'll go in. And if need be, I can obviously do a late entry to the officer route after that. As we know, life can throw little curveballs every now and again. And at the time, I had two young, beautiful daughters with my ex-partner. And when I came back from, we'd already split up after my first tour, when my then second child was only about 5-6 months old, unfortunately. We split up, and then I went out to Afghanistan a second time. And unfortunately, while I was away, there was a few things that were ongoing. From my ex-partner's kind of side, but it meant when I came back there was a lot of I think you call them, is it children's services, maybe something like that in the US?
CPS, child protective services.
So we have a very similar, and at the time my kids were very young, they were coming up to 4 and 2, came back, and it almost meant I had to leave the Marines. So I'd worked all this time to get in the commandos, I loved it, on two tours. But anyone that's a parent knows, when your kids come calling, man, it's not even a second thing. It's like, see you later. I know what I've got to do. Now, I would have loved to have stayed in the Marines. The Marines, by the way, I'm sure you hear a lot of stories where the military, for some people, were really good for them and they really helped them and they backed them up. And you see some stories where, for whatever reason, maybe the military wasn't there for that individual. Well, I can honestly say the military were there for me. And they looked after me. Like I said, I had a good couple of tours and my unit looked after me, but it meant I had to leave. I didn't want to be a desk Marine. I didn't do all that to do the business in Afghanistan twice to then just be at home. So I decided to leave. Led me into personal training. I then met my now wife. We've now got two more beautiful daughters. So I'm surrounded by women. I've got my beautiful wife, Emma, and then my daughters now, 15, 13, 9 and 4, Summer, Sienna, Sophia and Bella. Went into personal training. And like I said at the beginning, I've always loved fitness. I like all things health and fitness. You can give me anything. Even back in the day in sport, in school, give me a racket, I'll play with it. Give me a ball, I'll kick it about. Give me a pitch, I'll run on it. Give me a crossbar, I'll hang on it and do pull-ups. I love sport and health and fitness. But if I'm honest, the real, you know, when, a bit like I said at the beginning, when you get that sign, and I was just finding that everything in the mental game was pulling me in. Like, I was loving the physical side, clearly, being an ex-Marine, like getting people fit, losing body fat, getting them strong, sports-specific client goals. But for me, it was helping people with their mental game and their mental performance and what goes on between the ears. So gradually, bit by bit, I started focusing a bit more on the mental game. So if you can imagine, and for anyone that's listening but not watching, I'm twisting my hand over, I flipped the script a little bit. So I start with the physical to impact the mental a little bit. Now what I do is I focus on the mental game. And by the way, one of the tools to do that can be working on your body and movement as well. And that's where I am today. I've requalified, a post-grad in psychology. I think I was one of the first graduates from Brian Kane's Mental Performance Mastery Academy. Brian Kane is was George St. Pierre's mental performance coach, CBT trained, NLP trained. And yeah, now like, I love everything the mental game. And Rachel, I'm sure you'll agree, like you can gauge a lot of what people are into. But if you're a reader, the types of books you read, the podcasts, if you like audio, the films, YouTube videos, well, if you looked at my reading list, 49 out of the last 50 books have all been on mindset, mental performance, mental health, confidence, motivation, tools, techniques. And that's where I am now today. So that's my story. You know, once a Marine, always Marine. And now, like, I've learned some pretty cool stuff along the way that I like to share with people and help them get that mind working for them rather than against them.
That's incredible. And I want to take it back just a little bit to your experience as a Marine. And sure. The reason is because while I do have international listeners, majority of my listeners are in the US. And I think we know our little bubble with the US military, yeah. Right? Like the US Marine Corps and Air Force, Navy, I mean, but what we don't really know a whole lot about the military in other countries. Yeah. And so this is why I love that you're bringing this perspective of a military in another country to this show, because I think it expands our mindset, especially for me as someone from the US that maybe doesn't know as much. So talk us through what it is like being in the military in the UK. And what is that process like, you know, from boot camp to training? And you could just kind of give it, you don't have to get too deep into it, but just to kind of give us a general overview of that.
Well, first of all, you're talking with the finest armed forces in the world. Okay, let's not forget that, all right?
Ooh, I don't
know. Hey, look, we're all one big family, right? We do it in different ways. I'm having a bit of fun with you. And my first tour, actually, I served with some USMC and a couple of guys, real sound guys. They came out, a couple of ops of us and stuff like that. And also on my second tour. So that was pretty cool. I got good experiences with the US. We like you guys. It's good fun. But look, the forces are very similar in that we've got a job to do. In terms of training, I always say to this story, but you might find this quite interesting. In Britain, we have our kind of, you know, our recruits and our officers. And the way the UK works is officers tend, if you're in the Navy or the Army or the RAF, to train in a different place to the recruits, right? But what I love about the Marines, and I say this to everybody, in the Royal Marines, the same training areas, officers and recruits, the same tests. Per se, they do a little bit more navigation in their commando tests, the officers, compared with the commandos, but it's the same routes, the same environments. So there's one thing you get with the British Marines, which I absolutely love, and it's so unique within the UK Armed Forces, is that our officers, you know, whether you like them or not, whether you think he was a douchebag or not, but they've trained in exactly the same areas, doing the same hills, the same mud, the same horribly, horrible hill runs that you've done. So you have that respect there. But obviously joking aside, like training was tough. Like, I've got no issue saying it. Like, without a doubt, in terms of the 8 months of training, the hardest thing I've ever done as a block of time period in my life. Like, it's hard. It's, you know, the reason why the Royal Marines are the number one brigade and the number one force in the UK and pretty respected pretty worldwide is because what we go through in training is hard. And it's, you do so many things, like it tightens you up, it works your discipline. You get 8 months. Fit as hell mentally and physically. You do some horrible stuff as well, right? Like, I look back on it and I still pull on some of those resources now, Rachel. Wow. You know, it's funny. It's really funny.
Wow. So you have boot camp and then go into training, or is it all one big block of training and then
It's one big block of training. So depending on where you go into. So the Army do it slightly differently to the Navy, to the RAF, and also the Marines. But the Marines, you do, they've changed it, I think, slightly now since COVID. I think they do like about a 4 to 6 week pre-training and then you go into the full training now. But when I was in, you did like a PRMC, Potential Royal Marines course. You then did some fitness tests and then you had your PRMC and then you went into your 8 month training. And it's like nonstop 8 months, getting stripped back, worked hard, fatigued, injured, tested, always on the run, always on the go, always expect the unexpected. And yeah, it's hard. Like, I'll tell you a funny story. Have we got time for a funny story, Colette?
Yeah, go ahead.
I mentioned this, you'll love this, stories. The US, I want you to really just picture what I'm about to tell you, right? So When you're in training, where the Marines camp is in Limpston. So Limpston is near a place called Exmouth. It's right on the south coast of the UK. So if you can imagine the shape of the UK, it's right down that kind of bottom, centre to left-hand side, right? And there's a massive estuary there, and it's water, right? But as everyone knows with estuaries and geography, the water goes down, right? And it leaves a sediment. What that's called in the Marines, it's called the infamous Royal Marines Mud Run. So when you've maybe done something not quite right as a troop, and they want to get you, they take you on a mud run. So you go out the back gate, you go out to this what's left of this estuary. It's thick, it's like a half a meter, it's mud, it's sediment, it's cold, it is wet. And they thrash you for like an hour. You're doing a circuit, you're running, you're sprinting, you're crawling, you're pushing logs with your elbows, you're doing log runs, the full shebang. And actually you'd think, oh my God, that's bad enough. And I'll never forget, we got made to do two, by the way, when I was in training. But on the first one, they brought us back in. It was something like 1:30 in the morning, something like that. And you're like I said, you're fatigued, Rachel. You know, we've all been there and done this kind of stuff in training, but you're fatigued, you're cold, you're wet, you're tired. You got sores, you got cuts, you name it. And they got us to take our jackets off, and they're like, right, gents, get your coats off. And they got us to take our coats off, and you're thinking, what's going on here? And they got us to start windmilling the jackets. So what I'm doing now, if you're listening or watching this, I'm shaking my hand. Imagine you're trying to wait for an emergency, for example. You're swinging your arm around. Whilst you're doing this, this mud and this sediment, meow, meow, is going everywhere. So not only have you got to get yourself washed, not only have you got to get your kit washed, you've then got to clean this whole block. And anyone knows anything about mud and wet mud is it gets everywhere. And I say that story because I look back on it now, and that's the exact type of thing that we needed. Because war and operations is not easy. War and operations, you're going to do stuff and you don't want to do it. And it's hard. It's mentally and physically hard. And I always tell that story to people because I look back at it now and I kind of go, that's one of my, as well as the commando tests and the friends that are made in there and the hard work and the yomps and the exercises. But for me, the commando test, the final X, and that moment will always stay in my mind because of the emotional sting. You could call it trauma. I don't know. People like to use different words, but the sting, the attachment. When I think of my time at Limpston, that comes straight out, you know. But it was, it was interesting. I hope anyone listening is kind of gauging the pain that we went through in that moment, right?
Yeah. Which is really interesting for me because then my experience going through, I mean, it was in the Navy in the US, but my experience was not anywhere close to that. Now, granted, the Navy isn't a ground force.
Yeah.
So it's going to have a different type of training. And I'm not sure if the Royal Navy over there goes through intense training to that caliber as well, or if theirs is more based on like being on a boat, right? There is a certain level of mental toughness, I think, that is gained from the exercises that the ground forces go through. And I think for me, I had wished that my experience in boot camp and training did make me more mentally tough. I just felt like it was like kind of a disappointment, unfortunately.
Oh, what a shame.
But you know, and maybe it's because I went into the wrong service. I don't know. Maybe I should have gone into the
Marine. Right? You never know.
But you know, I think everything happens for a reason too. So, I got put where I got put for a reason, and that's okay. But I am curious how the state of mental health is in the Marines over on your side of the world. Because I know how mental health is in our military in the US, but talk to us about what it looks like over there.
Yeah, like I can only talk now, obviously. You know, I think you think I left nearly, well, just over 10 years, about 10 and a half years ago. I left in October 2013. When I was in, they looked after us. I think the thing about the military is, yes, you've got the overarching command and the orders that get put down and things like that. However, it's a very different units, different cap badges operate in different ways. And the unit I was in, CLR, was a really good unit. We had a good troop boss. We had some really good higher ranks in there that looked after us. Do you know what I mean? Like, we worked hard, but we played hard too. And I can only talk from my time, but they looked after us. Like I said, when I had a lot going on when I first came back and realized, wow, like at this point, the only swear word you're gonna hear me say, shit had hit the fan while I was away, right? And because we were so busy doing what we were doing, you lose touch a little bit with home. I was having the phone calls back, but it's only when I came back, I realized what was going on. And to go from a war zone where you were out the gate every single day doing the business to then come back and be told, wow, stuff's been going on at home. And by the way, you need to have your kids while this is all going on. And well, but obviously I love that. I'm the kids full time, but mentally it was tough because it took a bit of time to adapt and I was trying to find my feet as well. So the Marines looked after me. Now, there's a lot of good charities. The Royal Marines Charity in the UK is a massive charity that looks after Marines specifically and veterans and anyone that's attached to the Marines that is going through a tough time. So, yeah, like the mental health is a very, in terms of the Marines and the Armed Forces, I think it's probably very similar to US. It's so individual and context dependent. You know, like it's, everyone has different things that they go through. Right. And you can have like Marines that went on, for example, you got like Marines at the moment that haven't, you know, they've been in 10 years and they've never done an operation, but that's not their fault. It's just, there's not a war on per se involving the Royal Marines right now.
Right.
So when I was in, everything was Afghanistan. Honestly, Rachel, like everything got changed. Like training became completely Afghanistan dominated. We're very focused, the Marines, before I go back onto mental health, like we were very Arctic warfare. Like we were the elite Arctic warfare in the British forces. Jungle trained. But you know what? Did I do any of that? No. Did anyone I served with do any of that? Nah, not really. Why? Because every resource was going into Afghanistan. Now, the Marines, I believe, are starting to do that again, which, by the way, for the lads that might not be doing tours, hey, at least you're doing your Arctic warfare and your jungle training. That's pretty cool, right? But, yeah, look, going back to what I was saying about the mental health, it's a very individual, I think, depending on how I think your tour went. But, for example, when we get back from tours and operations, we get a period of time off called you get R&R in the middle, and then you get some time off afterwards. Our unit at the time, I remember, you get like, it must be about 6-7 weeks off, something like that, right? And we came back, we had a period of time off. And we got ours divided into two. So they're like, look, lads, we want you back for a week in the middle. And at the time, everyone was like, what? Because obviously people wanted to go away, do stuff. Some lads going to Thailand and stuff like that to kind of decompress. But you know what? That was the best thing they could have done, Rachel, because what that gave you was an opportunity to check on each other, have some fun, see each other, chat, talk. And I think that for me was like a winning tactic. Now, I don't know where else that happens like that in the UK, because I was in the Marines and the unit that I was at. But for me, that was like, anyone listening that's in charge of doing stuff like that for their units and their organizations, coming from a Brit, that was a winning tactic because it just gave everyone a chance and a space to see each other. You know, I mean, we didn't do much, but when we came back, we trained, we had a few nights out, we had some funny stuff that we did, we did some fizz, we went outside, we had some barbecues, didn't really do much, but it was create a space for everyone to check in on each other, being proper oppos, you know, but it's, yeah, that's my view.
How was your transition out of the military?
Hey, like I said, it was messy. Look, actually, that's a lie. Joe, that's a lie, Rachel. It wasn't messy from the outside. It probably looked really slick. Yeah, it looked really slick. I put my chit in because of what was happening with my kids and getting full custody. And we had like a period of time, which you have to serve. You notice it worked out best for me financially and with my family to keep doing that. And like I said, the Marines looked after me. They put me in a careers office for a few months and I was helping, you know, with the recruitment of young Marines coming through, working like a Friday morning and stuff like that. It was really cool. They looked after me. But behind the scenes, you know, you go from doing the business in an environment like Afghanistan and coming back and realizing, wow, like I worked my butt off to get in the Marines. I love wearing the green lid. I've got my Marines tattoo on my arm with pride. I absolutely love it. Bonf, it's going. But I think the more time you spend in what you haven't got and what you're going to lose, the less time you make way for, okay, well, what could I now do? And do you know what? I now look back and I'm very grateful for a lot of things that have happened since then, Rachel, because like I said, I've met my wife. I've got two more beautiful kids. I've now got my business that I run this way. I've done lots of cool things in that meantime. So I look at it as everything happens for a reason. And you know what? Maybe it was just meant to be that happened because there's things that were going to happen further down the line. But it was messy at times behind the scenes. I don't mind saying that. Like I found running for me was like a real savior because I've always been into running, right? I don't want to make out like I never ran before because the Marines are really good runners, right? We're pretty fit. But I found solitary runs became a real big thing for me just to decompress a little bit, to let my mind wander. Because like I said, it's when you work your butt off to get into a certain position, And like I said, I came back from Afghanistan that second time and I was going on a junior command course. I wanted to go PTI or air crew. And I was like, man, this is what I'm going to do. Boom. And it was like that moment of realization, like that isn't going to happen. And I'm sure there's a lot of listeners that are listening to this amazing podcast and going, I've been through that too. And I know everyone's got their different ways of dealing with things. But for me, I've always been a tackler. I like seeing it. I don't like hiding from it. I like getting the information. I like facing it. I like leaning into it. And I kind of encourage that with the way I work with people now, because when you close your eyes and you turn away, that thing grows. And it grows in volume. It grows in size. It grows in depth. So for me, like facing it, going out and run. So like face it and then go and do my thing. Come back, face it again. And a bit like, you know, exposure therapy per se, I treated it a little bit like that with how I kind of got through the process. And I developed a mindset and just pushed through. But the fact is, at the end of the day, my post-tour mental state and my post-tour mental health, and even the trauma of leaving something that I saw myself being in for a lot longer, was completely quietened down by the love of my children.
Mm-hmm.
It was not like, so for me, it sounds quite strange. That situation may have helped certain things because all my focus went on that. It was like, right, what am I going to do now job-wise? If I'm coming out, I've got to support my children. Obviously, I've now got my wife, my beautiful wife, and my other two kids as well. But it was like, right, what can I do? Not what haven't I got? What do I need to do? Not what can't I do now? So it was like a guiding light for me to kind of go a certain way. And that's the power of that why. And that's the power. Anyone that's a parent that's listening is going to go, yeah, Chris, I know exactly what you're talking about. So funny old thing, since that moment, Rachel, whenever I have something big coming up now, I think about my why, and whether it's challenges, personal, professional, fitness challenges, I use my kids and my wife because I know I'd do anything for them. And that drives me through.
Yeah, that's interesting. It almost makes me think, why aren't we focusing more when service members across the globe transition out of the military, of setting them up with that mindset of what is your why and what's your greater purpose aside from the military, to kind of detach that purpose from serving in the military. Yeah. So just kind of some interesting thoughts there. And I love asking these questions because I think there's something to be learned from each service, each branch, each group across the globe, that realizing that these feelings don't discriminate depending on where you live. You know, whether you're transitioning from the military in the UK or the US or Australia, I mean, we all go through this period of major change where it's like, okay, well, today I am a member of the military and tomorrow I'm not. And how we handle that isn't going to change because of where we live or where we're stationed. It's kind of a similar experience that we all go through. So I appreciate you sharing that. Is there anything that you would have done differently in your transition if you could go back?
Do you know what? I don't really spend too much time thinking about that, if I'm honest. And that's just because I can't do anything about it.
Right.
You know, one thing I will say, and just to give a bit of tips to anyone that's going through maybe something that I went through or something's resonated, what I found was I couldn't be a Royal Marine anymore, but I could still do things that Royal Marines are known for, challenges, pushing myself through pain, doing things that test me mentally and physically. So something that I've done since then is I do regular annual challenges. Like every year I'll do something personally and professionally that just pushes me out the comfort zone, like gets my threshold up a little bit, that just makes me go, you know, like when you look at challenges, Rachel, and you kind of go, if it's too easy and it doesn't get you a little bit nervous, that doesn't really excite me too much. But if it's something that makes me go, oof, that's what I like. I like to do things like that. Goes back to that quote I said at the beginning with, you can take the boy out of the Marines, but you can't take the Marines out of the boy. So like, there's no reason why, if you are not transitioning out or if you are leaving the military or you've left the military, no matter where you live, I truly believe this, you can't still take things from your time in the military and bring them into your civilian life, however that may look. And sometimes you just need to look back and kind of go, well, what were the things that I enjoyed in the military? How can I bring that out into my civilian life? And like I said, I do that with challenges, physical challenges, things that get me a little bit, that scares me a little bit. Yeah, I like that. Let's give it a go. And I try and do something every year. It's just become an annual thing, whether it's boxing, whether it's marathons, whether it's running challenges, whether it's kettlebell challenges, whether it's what I've got at the moment, which is a splits challenge, can you believe? Former Royal Marines commando is trying to do the splits. I tell you what, Anyone listening? It's not a quick fix. It's hard. It's really hard to do.
I was
going to
say, how's that going?
Do you know what? Honestly, right? It's, again, I could talk for ages about this. I've only started it since like right at the beginning of January. Of all the challenges I've done, this at the moment is proving really fruitful because this is not overnight and I'm nowhere near to, well, okay, maybe I'm harsh on myself. I'm not ridiculously far away from doing the splits, but you ain't going to see me on no YouTube videos at the moment doing the splits. You get me? Like, so it's not, it's, but I'm really enjoying it. And actually, funny thing you asked that, like, if anyone's listening and they do like ice baths, cold showers, things like that, first of all, great for the mind, great for inflammation, great for your body and mind. But since doing the splits challenge, I have realized people go out and buy ice baths, have cold showers. The splits can deliver a similar value. It doesn't feel particularly lovely when you're doing them. You got to do it no matter what. You got to keep doing it. It's hard, but you know what? You can do your deep breathing while you do the splits. It's brilliant. So like I'm getting better and better. And it's funny, Rachel, like sometimes you'll be doing, I follow like a set sequence. We haven't got time to go through it today, but I follow a set sequence during the day and I do a little nighttime routine and you'll see no progress for like 2 weeks. And then all of a sudden you dip into a movement one night and you're like, wow, where did that come from? So I see this as a year challenge, like, and everyone knows the importance of, you know, good mobility in the hips, your back, your hamstrings. Funny old thing, you sit down a lot, people that are listening, you're going to have tight hamstrings. So stretching your hamstrings is going to be a good thing. But yeah, I like challenges. And I encourage anyone that if you need a bit of drive right now, you need a bit of distraction, or you want to get your head into the right game, pick something that makes you feel a bit uncomfortable and just spend a bit of time each day working towards that and delve into that uncomfortability and lean into it, dance with it a little bit. You won't go far wrong.
I think that's incredible advice. And not only the discomfort thing and something as, I say, as simple as the splits, but I think when we think about, like, you compared cold showers, the thought of that can be very intimidating because before you get in the shower, there's a bit of a process, right? You either have to get into minimal clothing or take off all your clothing. And in that process, you're thinking about what I'm about to do. And for some people that can be a lot, whereas with splits, you know, you can just right then and there, as long as you're not wearing, you know, like tight jeans, get into the splits position. And do it then and there. Like, there's a lot less thought process beforehand. And for someone like me, that's a lot less intimidating to do, but it is still incredibly uncomfortable and it can still be an incredible exercise. But I also love that you touched on doing other challenging things outside of the military. Someone told me a quote one time that I don't know who originally quoted it, but if you're not growing, you're dying. And one of the interesting things about the military, whether we like to admit it or not, is we're always growing in some way, shape, or form with some kind of challenge. Whether we're always growing in some way.
You're growing right now. This is great. Right?
Yeah. My daughter is sitting next to me coloring right now. So
it's all good. It's what kids are for. Gotta have a little disruption. Hello,
So, you know, the thing is we're always growing in the military, whether it's a intense physical challenge where we're, you know, doing what you did in the mud, right? Or if it is just like a mental challenge of, hey, I have 3 months to learn this concept that seems way too big for me to master right now. And I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm just going to digest it one piece at a time and do the best I can. There's these constant challenges that hit us in the military. And a lot of us get out of the military and we stop challenging ourselves altogether.
Definitely.
And so there's a lot to be said for that piece of, you know, a lot of people feel like they lose a sense of purpose. Maybe it's because that challenge piece goes away and we stop pushing ourselves when we get out of the military. Yeah. And so definitely something to explore there. And I appreciate
it. It is. And by the way, there's like a little, just to share with your amazing listeners, like I always follow some with challenges, right? I make the commitment, I make it public, and I take daily execution. And those three steps, by the way, if you wanted to challenge yourself, could work really well. Commit to something, first of all. Commit mentally. Commit internally. Say you're going to do it, commit to it. Make it public. That doesn't mean shut your mouth off on social media if you don't want it. Maybe telling someone that you care about. Someone that their opinion of you that you really value. And then take daily execution. I love goals that a bit like, you know, Rachel, I'm going to ask you a question quickly, right? Do you brush your teeth every day?
I do.
Yeah. Do you drink water every day?
Yes.
Well, do you sleep every day?
Yes.
Do you get washed every day?
Yes.
I hope so. Thank you. The reason why you do that stuff is because it's mission critical, right?
Right.
I say, I'll go one step further. When you're looking after your mental game and you're challenging yourself, that needs the same approach. We do something every single day. So when I normally take up a challenge for anyone listening, like, I like to do stuff where I commit to something for a period of time. And I'm like, it's a no zero days approach. There is no zero day. It's every single day. And it might be different extremities within that description, AKA, if it's movement, I might not do the same thing every day. There might be a higher intensity and a lower intensity. But do it every single day because it's mission critical. And I think that when you talk about self-esteem and self-care, we improve our self-esteem by closing the gap by what we say we're going to do and then what we are going to do. Wow, that improves our self-esteem massively. How can you do that really easily? Commit to something, put it down on paper, look at it every day, and then do it every day. You can't help but feel better about yourself when you do that. And by the way, an even better thing, you do that, share a little bit, you might make someone else start doing the same thing. And then you get that altruistic concept of, wow, I'm helping them as well. And then you don't want to stop because you're thinking, now they're looking at me going, hey, I'm looking up to this person. And it's like a cascading impact. So yeah, no zero days. I could spend an hour talking about no zero days, but yeah, it's a little insight into something that I believe in.
Yeah, no, that's incredible. And I appreciate you sharing that insight. Talk to us a little bit more about the journey with you on the mental side of things and what you've been doing since you began that journey.
Oh, cool. Yeah, again, I could talk all night about this. So start doing that with your neck in case you need me to stop talking. When I went to personal training, that was wicked. I love it. I still do an aspect of that now. But with the mental game, my company is now called Therapy Size, and it's not therapy. It's not counseling. It's exercise for the mind. It's giving yourself tools and techniques to work the mental game. So I've implemented something called the Therapy Size Toolkit. And there's like 200 tools taken from lots of different disciplines, some from my time in the Marines, some from my postgrad in psychology, some from Brian Kane's Mental Performance Mastery, some from my NLP, some from CBT. And I've created this toolkit where, you know, when you have a tradesperson, like I think you mentioned your husband's in construction, right? So like, I guarantee I will put money. I don't know your husband, right? I don't know your partner, but I guarantee he has not got just one tool. I bet he has to go, hey, darling, I'm off to work today. And he just goes there with his hammer every day.
Whole truck full.
Yeah, there you go. Why does he have a whole truck full of tools?
Because he can't just do the job with one tool.
Yeah, you need different tools for different jobs. It's the same with the mental game. So what I like to apply is I'm not loyal to one tool or one method. I love CBT, but every client doesn't do CBT. I love NLP. I don't use NLP with every client. I love Mental Performance Mastery. I don't do it with every single client. I love exercise and mood enhancers with exercise and fitness and movement. I don't do that every single client. Different clients need different things. We all need different things at certain times. And so a bit like you said at the beginning with thoughts, feelings, and behaviors, I get a real, real like vibe increase, a real rush from helping people think, feel, and behave differently. And there's such a link between the three that the old school way of thinking was, look, let's change the way you think. Let's do some rationalizing of thoughts, right? And then we can change how you feel. And you know what? If you feel a little bit different, we may then be able to get you out of the house and get you moving and doing those other things. Great. But what I love is that it can also work the other way around. Well, you know what? I know you're not thinking like that right now. And I know you're not feeling like that right now. We've got to validate it. Let's not repress it. Let's acknowledge it. You're feeling a certain way. You don't need to ignore that. But what could it be that if you behave a certain way and you do something behavioral, that it could change the way you feel? And if you can change the way you feel, you then change the way you think. So it can work both ways. So I like using tools in lots of fun ways. Some are a bit more cognitive. Some are a little bit more like the top-down approach per se. Some a bit more bottom-up, doing various breathing techniques. And then some are like exercise-based, state change-based, getting a bit of energy. But when you start applying these tools, again, I could talk all night about it, but when you start applying these tools at the right time for the right person, they can massively change your life. And for me, what I love about them is they don't cost. When you know that tool, you've got that tool. It will not cost you anymore. Yeah, there's advanced tactics and things you can tweak it with, but like, how do I say? Okay, a classic example. You may have had someone talk about this before. You may have heard of this tool. It's called the Three Things Tool. Right. Now, the three things tool is one of the most easy, simple concepts, but the amount of people that I speak to will go, no, I've never done it. Before you go to bed every night, you're laying down, you turn the TV off, put your book down, kiss your partner goodbye, put the controller down, whatever, set your alarm, and then you go to sleep. Before you go to sleep, think of three things that made you happy or proud or grateful or excited by that 24 hours. It's got to be within the 24 hours because my rule is it's bright in the mind. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not like a faded memory. It's bright. It's loud. You can access that memory easily. So from that 24 hours, just spend a couple of minutes laying there just thinking of three things that made you feel a certain way. I like to use the emotion I'm trying to cultivate more. So if I've got a client that wants to be happy more, hey, let's cultivate the ease of recalling happy times. Yeah, if it's pride, if it's excitement, if it's energy, if it's confidence, no matter what it is, three things in that area. Just spend a couple of minutes thinking about it. One, it'll keep you nice and calm. Two, you'll be nice and relaxed. Three, the last thing your conscious mind, boom, dumps into that mind of yours before you go to sleep, three positive thoughts, not what email have I got to do tomorrow? Oh no, didn't do that. Oh my God, I got that meeting. It is without a doubt one of the most simple yet highly effective tools anyone can do. Do you know what? All it costs you is a couple of minutes of your time. I've had clients do it, Rachel, before. I kid you not, right? And it happens weekly, sometimes daily. I'll get clients practicing it in front of me. So I'll be like, look, I know you're not at home, you're not in bed, but just imagine you're doing this at home now. And you will see their face change. You will see their eyes close, their cheeks flush, their mouths, the side corners of their mouth rise, their cheekbones. You will see that. They are just invoking a memory and experience. Just imagine you did that every night. And it's not just about feeling good in the moment. What I found through a lot of studying and daily execution of this with clients, seeing it day in, day out, is it makes positive emotions easier to access. And it's not like you're repressing the negatives. It's just you're cranking up the volume over here. And bit by bit, it's not even like you're repressing them. They're there, but they're not bothering you as much. It's a really powerful tool. Give it a go if you've never done it before.
Yeah, that's incredible. I think what I appreciate the most about the method that you take is it sounds like it's very customizable to each client.
Definitely.
It's not like you're just like, I am a talk therapy specialist and we do talk therapy and we're not going to do anything other than talk therapy. And I'm not saying that every therapist is like this.
Of course.
I think from the outside looking in, as someone looking for a therapist, most people, they look at a therapist's bio or what they do. And that therapist is typically like, I do talk therapy or I do NLP or I do CBT. Like they do the one thing, right?
Yeah.
And I would hope that most therapists are using multiple tools depending on the needs of the client. But I have also seen the side of things where a therapist really only accesses one set of tools. And I think that's where there can be a lot of discomfort surrounding therapy for people that are going to a therapist because that therapist only uses one set of tools that might not be the right fit for that person. And so I'm so glad and appreciative that you said every person's different and acknowledging that and knowing that the set of tools you bring to the table for one person might look drastically different than what you bring to the table for the next person. And I wish therapists all across the globe were like that. I think it would make the idea of therapy a lot less intimidating for a lot of people because they would know I'm going to go see this person and they're going to give me the tools that are the best fit for me. And then not everyone knows all the tools that are out there. And I don't think it's the client's job to know all the tools that are out there because
exactly.
And if they knew all the tools, they wouldn't be seeking therapy, right? Or maybe they are. They're just looking for a certain tool. I don't know. Every person's different.
But it's the delivery as well, Rachel, right? And like me and you, like, look, we've met, we're talking, we're vibing. This is great. We're getting on really well. I encourage clients to, like, you don't just have to speak to me. Like, if you're picking someone to work with, speak to a couple of people because the tool is important and the method is important. But if you do, if you're spending time with somebody, you go, I don't like them, I don't really feel a vibe, it's not going to be as effective. So speak to a couple of people, do a bit of research. And I encourage that. And that seems to go down well with new clients that come to see me because they realize I don't mind saying go and speak to other people. I'm not saying, hey, look, sign right now. I want payment right now. You're locked in, you're mine. Boom, done. It doesn't work like that. Go and speak to a couple. You know who I am. You're obviously on a journey at the moment. If you feel I'm the, and I feel that you're the right one, it's going to work. Hey, let's talk and then we'll go from there.
Right. And then I also assume that you're not saying it from a place of, you know, passive aggressive of, yeah, go talk to someone. Right. Nah, yeah.
You know that.
Nah, that's important too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is. And that's the thing. It's something I've learned a lot. I look, I'm a Royal Marines commander. We're like the alphas in the military. I don't like that term, but it's something we get called. And I used to think I was the bee's knees for everyone when it came to the mental game and coaching. But what I've realized is, do you know what? Without sounding arrogant here, and for anyone listening, I promise you I'm not. I'm really good at what I do, but I'm not the right fit for everybody. Some people need someone a little bit more mellow. Some people need someone a little bit quieter and maybe a little bit more timid. That isn't me. So again, you learn through this amazing thing called life and the roller coaster of life. You learn a lot about yourself. And I think that's what I love about social media, Rachel, actually. And I'm sure you get it with your podcast. Like, the content you put out will naturally attract certain people towards you. So anyone listening that's running a business or has got a mission at the moment, put out content, because one, is genuine. Two, you can't hide. What you see is what you get. And three, you'll naturally pull people towards you that like a bit of what you do. And do you know what? If people don't like it, that's okay. There'll be plenty of people for them as well. We're a big world. There's lots of different people, lots of ways you can help each other.
It's so true. And that the social media can be such an intimidating place too. I think that's what I found with myself, and what kind of drew me back a little bit is like some of the first like negative comments I got, I had to sit there and I had to be like, okay, it's not directed towards me. It's them. I had to like take a breath and be like, and have the honest conversation of, are you ready for this potentially on a larger scale? And so you brought up the social media thing. And so I wanted to acknowledge that too. Yes, it is an important place to be. Also understand that other people's thoughts, opinions, and emotions is based on what they're going through.
Yeah.
It's not a direct reflection of, you know, of me. I'll speak for myself here. So something important to acknowledge there as well.
Do you know the scary thing is as well, Rachel? You may have heard this before. I heard this a while ago and I love it. Like, for example, like, if you don't mind me asking, how, I know you never ask a lady her age, but how old are you, Rachel, if you don't mind me? Give me a bracket if you want me to tell you exactly.
I'm 31.
Okay. So what you would call us, right, is we are digital immigrants. The digital world, when we were young, right, wasn't really there. But these kids now, they're digital natives. So when we talk about, oh, you don't know, like, they don't have a clue, because they're like, well, hang on, dad or whatever, like, I wouldn't have a clue. We never had this, right? So like, it's a real funny, social media is an intriguing concept, and it can be really dark, but also I think there's so much opportunity out there. It just needs certain organizations and people to really manage it well, because life is cool. The world is a wicked place, and there's so much more than just social media. And, you know, if you're just doing things for likes, comments, it's about impact. It's about collaboration, connection. That's the beauty of social media. Look at us now. I know this is a podcast, not necessarily social media, but this will be getting shared on social media. It's going to send a message. If it can impact one person in a positive way, job done. This is great. And again, I think people use social media, if we can use it right, it's got potential to be a really good thing. It's just one of those things that it can go both ways at times, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's a whole different hour-long conversation that we could have too.
yeah. We'll save that for another time, right?
Right. Well, Chris, I am so appreciative that you came on the show to share just a little bit of your life and a snippet of the impact that you've made on the world with your journey so far. Where can people find you and how can they best support you?
Oh, cool. So if you go on my website, www.therapysize.co.uk, or on Facebook, Therapy Size Mental Performance Experts, or find me on LinkedIn. I'm always jumping on podcasts and putting content out there. I put quite a bit of stuff on social media. Like if you want to connect in some way, just, you know, add me on one of those kind of methods. Drop me a message, drop me an email, chris@ukfundamental.com, and go from there. But like anything mental game related that you would like some assistance with, or you just want to chat, yeah, I'm always up for a conversation, just like tonight.
Awesome. Well, as always, that information will all be in the show notes for anyone that wants to check out Chris's information. And then I always encourage my listeners, just go on social media, share with your audience, your network, let people around you know what Chris is doing, because you never know who might need that information, even if you don't need that information personally. So please do that. It's free. It takes a few minutes and it makes an impact on people that you might not even know it makes an impact on. So do that. And the last question I'm going to ask you today, Chris, is if you have any last words or pieces of advice that you want to share with the listeners.
Oh, impact time, lasting moment time. What would I love your awesome community to go away with? First of all, I've got three. Can I share three little snippets real quickly? Number one, it's the start that stops most people. Don't let the start stop you. Right? It's so easy to talk ourselves out of something. If you're going to do it, just start small. Make it easy to start. You want to run a marathon? Go out and run 100 meters tomorrow. Walk 100 meters. Make the start possible. Just start in some way. You don't need to be perfect. So number one, it's the start that stops most people. Number two, the fears you don't face will become your walls. You may think that turning away makes them go away and you can't see them. They grow. They'll hold you in. They'll invisibly keep you in a pit and in a cell. It's just the cell you can't see. So the fears you don't face will become your walls. And my third one, one of my favorite ones, you can use any word at the start of this sentence. I like the phrase, mastery takes massive practice. Courage takes massive practice. Being strong takes massive practice. Anything you want, you can use that first word for. But the key is it all takes practice. And the fun thing about practice is it's far from perfect. You'll have some good practices, some not so good practices. But the main thing with practice is you do it, you commit to it, and no matter how you feel, you make your mission greater than your feelings. That's what it's about.
Thank you for taking the time to listen in today. With your support, we are able to increase awareness of the mental health issues affecting service members and veterans today with the goal of creating positive change. If you got value from this episode, please take 30 seconds to subscribe and share this episode within your own network. Until next time, remember, your story matters, your mental health matters, and your story doesn't end here.